George of the Locked On Kings podcast, and of course, ABC 10. And I'm sure there are a few people happier, more happy than our man Matt George to be back at the Golden 1 Center. This past week, we were discussing, it's a small little detail, but I think it's an important one that I think Kings fans has become accustomed to. Normally, you get just kind of different news and notes about this throughout the week, and I hadn't seen anything and asked you. Mike, in fact, does have two-a-days going on right now, yeah?
Correct. To this point, Mike Brown has been doing two-a-day practices. The first practice, which is the main one that you see the media at the end in the middle of the day, typically early afternoon, that one is their long, big, main contact, hard work, heavy practice. And then he sends them home where they do their individual work, go get training, go hit the weights, whatever the case may be, whatever they need to do. And then they come back in the evening for a significantly lighter practice. It's a non-contact practice, so he's not running these guys into the ground. It's probably more walkthrough heavy. We haven't seen it, so we can only assume, but I'm assuming because it's non-contact, it's going to be more walkthrough heavy and more working on the five tenets of offense and defense that the Kings are trying to install. And then you have it's significantly shorter too, is from what I understand the night practices too. So that's what the two-a-days are to this point. I imagine those will slow down now that we're getting closer to actual preseason basketball. But to start, yeah, Mike is already known around the NBA for having the most practice time or being one of the most practice time heavy coaches. He tries to take advantage of every opportunity he can to get a practice in. So two-a-days are a staple of Mike Brown.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you too, Matt, because I was wondering, is this maybe like a two-week thing? First 2 weeks you have two-a-days, and then it slows down and you get the single game or single practice and preseason games after that? Or he doesn't go through training camp like this, does he?
Yeah, I highly doubt it. I wouldn't be surprised if after this week they're few and far between, depending upon what their game schedules look like and their travel schedules look like. He does this because he knows everybody is home and everybody is around, and that he has 5 straight days or more where everybody's going to be in one spot and their job is just to be getting in shape and getting ready. So he's just taking advantage of the extra time. And in his mind, it's like, well, there's 24 hours in a day. We got to be using more than 3 of them or 4 of them to get our teamwork together. So I expect this week is going to be the main week. It's like their hell week, right? This is going to be the main week with the conditioning and the two-a-days and things like that. And they'll probably peter off a little bit once we get into next week and Wednesday specifically when the Kings open their preseason.
What's been your biggest takeaway walking out of practice the last couple of days?
My God, how much time we got?
We got plenty, my man. You can cook.
I got a list for you. Man, and this even goes back to media day, guys. The vibes are very different. And that was what I took away from media day too. Remember media day last year? You had Mike Brown and De'Aaron Fox bringing up championships. They were using the word championship, and it wasn't, obviously it's not a bad thing. And they still believe, of course, this year, just like they believed last year. Like, if you're not competing for a championship, what the hell are you competing for? Mm-hmm. But last season felt like they were trying to speak it into existence. Like, no, this can be an expectation of us guys. Hey, championship, we can actually compete for a championship. That's what we're trying for. I have heard championship, that word, once since media day. And I can't remember, and it was someone obscure who mentioned it. And it was like an offhanded comment. My takeaway from that was the Kings are operating like they don't need to tell you that they're good enough to actually be in that conversation. They're operating like, yeah, you know, like we know we're there. We believe that we should be in that conversation. Now, I'm not ready to put this Kings team in championship contendership, but you have DeMar DeRozan who's saying this team is Western Conference Finals bound. You have Malik Monk who's echoed those sentiments. And again, Mike Brown and De'Aaron Fox have been operating over the last 3 years since they first started together here in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. They've been operating as if we are going to compete at the highest level. We expect to be there because we're not going to set a low bar for ourselves and be happy to achieve just making the playoffs and ending the playoff drought, right? So the biggest vibes that I've taken away from this group is they're operating the same way I would expect the Minnesota Timberwolves, Oklahoma City Thunder, Denver Nuggets, these teams that know they're going to be up there and have the confidence that they're going to be up there. Those are the vibes that I just get around this team over the last handful of days. that I've spent with them. They still need to be tested, and they're very much looking forward to playing against other people. Mike Brown said that at training camp yesterday. He said things got a little chippy, and that's good because they're getting excited to play against the Warriors and to play against other teams that they can defend, so they don't have to defend each other. Mm-hmm. But there's an air of confidence around this team, like, yeah, we're good. We know we improved this offseason. We know last season isn't who we are, and how last season ended should have been a lot different. We can't wait to prove it. That's the vibe that I get around this group.
Yeah, I like that. You know, we don't have to talk about what we think we are, or what our goal is. It's been the theme of some of the other discussions during the first week of training camp. We're just playing basketball. Mm-hmm. We're out there. We're going to play basketball. Mm-hmm. We're going to try and do it at a high level. We're going to try to do it as a team. And we expect that to result in a lot of wins, maybe a series win or whatever the case may be. But we don't have to speak on it. We're just going to go out here and play basketball. And that's I love that attitude as well, Matt. You talked about you liked it. I love that too. It's just basketball, and we're going to play it at a high level. That's it.
There's just a belief there, and DeMar DeRozan, I'm sure, brings a lot of this too. But there's just, like I said, a belief of, yeah, we're good. Mm. Like, we believe we are good. No, we don't believe. We know we are good, mm-hmm. and we know we still have work to do. We know the West is, I think this is a good way to put it, and I heard somebody put it this way, and I stole it and used it on my podcast. The Kings don't look at the West. DeMar DeRozan specifically doesn't look at the West as, look at all these great teams that were in a lion's den, right? Mm-hmm. No, we're a lion in the lion's den.
Right.
Like, the Kings look at themselves on the same level as all of the top teams in the West. Like, yeah, the West is the Wild West because we're part of that.
Right.
That's how the Kings are operating. That's how the Kings are approaching the season, which is good. They still have something to prove for sure. But in their minds, inside that building, they believe they are just as dangerous in the Western Conference as any other team in that conference. And they look forward. They look forward to proving that.
Matthew, you've been adamant for months that Malik Monk should be the starting two guard for the Sacramento Kings. Mike hasn't shut the door on much, but it sure feels like he kind of closed the door on that one. Again, he didn't. Feels like it. He didn't. But what do you think about that situation there?
Let's go with that door analogy. Mike is intentionally leaving it open a crack, but he's putting his foot right up against it. He's not moving an inch, just to give you hope, right? He won't commit to anything. But all signs, every single sign, guys, points to Keon Ellis. Every single sign. He will not. Keon shared with us too. No one's talked to Keon about being the starter. Mm-hmm. Right now, Keon is there because Kevin Huerter is not fully clear to participate in practice. He has been participating in non-contact drills, but when they go live, which, by the way, they've been going live since day one, which is a great indicator of how ahead of schedule this team is. Mm-hmm. Because typically you do not have live until minimum day two, normally day three, right? They did 5-on-5s today. Day three is typically when you start to see more live, because day one and day two are review and install and trying to get everybody on the same page and figure everything out. Even though they're implementing new guys, so much of this core is the same that the expectation was they'd be ahead of schedule. So they've been going live since day one. Kevin Huerter is not able to go live yet. I promise you, he's chomping at the bit to get back. He thinks he wants to right now, mm-hmm. but he's listening to his surgeons from what he's told us as to why he's not pushing through. But going back to Keon, I also believe too, if Kevin Huerter was cleared, I still think Keon's in that spot. And Mike, I don't think he showed his cards. I think he was just laying out the best argument for Keon Ellis as a starter. We already know defensively what Keon Ellis can do, right? Out of the three, Keon, Kevin, and Malik, Keon's the best defender. No doubt about it. What Mike Brown said yesterday was that Keon commands the fewest shots out of the three. And that is extremely important when you're talking about plugging him in with a lineup of four guys that none of us would be surprised if the Kings start out and one of those four guys is hot. Yeah. Tell me Keegan scored the first 8 points. DeRozan scored the first 8 points. Sabonis scored the first 8 points. Fox. None of us would be surprised by any of those scenarios. Mm-hmm. But Keon Ellis can be out there. Keon Ellis could take two shots in the first 9 minutes of the game with that starter shift before one of them subs out. He could only take one or two shots, but because of his defensive impact, And because of the amount of talent around him, the Kings can still get off to a really, really good start with him out there. Now, I still subscribe to Malik is your best player. Put your best five out there. Mm-hmm. I still subscribe to that. But Mike has shown zero indication towards that being the case. And every time you bring up Malik Monk, Mike brings up Manu Ginobili and Andre Iguodala.
Every time.
Every single time.
Every time.
Because Mike is a student.
And always forgets how many championships they won together. He like, how many championships? 8? 7? Like, not Mike, you know.
At this point, it's like 15, 16.
Mike, some of those are yours. Stop it. You know how many titles there are.
But Iggy, and I mean, he's a student of both Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich, and both of those guys did a pretty masterful job of recognizing the six-man talent on their roster and using that and taking advantage of that as much as he could. So, guys, I would be shocked at this point if Malik even comes close to that starting lineup, and I would be very, very surprised if anybody not named Keon Ellis is starting at the two spot on opening night against the Timberwolves.
So the thing that throws me off about Mike Brown and his starting thing, because I'm with you. I think Keon should be starting. Is he always throws, well, not always, maybe it was just one time. He throws in that caveat of, yeah, Keon's going to start with the starters because Kevin's hurt. You know what I mean? Not we're going to see how that works or nothing like that. It's always because Kevin's hurt. And it leads me to feel or maybe ask the question like, well, when Kevin is clear, does he just go right back into the starting line? Is that what you're trying to imply? And he does seem to leave the window open for that possibility.
We've caught on to that too, KC. And one of the things Mike was talking about, again, Mike was focusing on kind of what these guys do different, what they bring different. And Mike was also talking about Kevin as a passer. He thinks Kevin is an underrated passer with Kevin's ability to, if he puts the ball on the floor and kind of moves inside of the three-point line, he's actually pretty good at finding the open man or reacting to the defense and moving the ball. So Mike sees value in all three guys. Mm-hmm. Only one of them he has solidified, and that's Malik, just because of how valuable he feels Malik is off the bench. And that's just a pillar of Mike Brown's coaching philosophy is if you have a sixth man that is as good as Malik Monk is, that is not only a luxury, that is a must for a great basketball team. So he operates that way. So Malik is solidified. Keon and Kevin, definitely more up in the air. I think the one thing, the one mystery about this entire thing that I'll go back to, and we've talked about this before, is we know what Keon looks like off the bench. We don't know what Kevin looks like. And I don't think the Kings know either. So I think they're keeping that door open because maybe Kevin's at his best and the Kings are at their best with Kevin as a starter.
You know what's great about that? Casey and I have talked about this extensively. All of that is true. We don't know what Malik looks like as a starter.
100%.
No clue. 100%. And Mike's like, the hell with that. We're never going to find out, bitches. Just keep it moving.
And the crazy thing.
Stop asking me. What's Nick Saban's line?
I'm not changing, so quit asking.
Quit asking.
The interesting thing about that, to piggyback off that, is the few numbers we have of Malik starting are way better than anything he has on the bench. Like, he started like 7 games with the Lakers, and his points per game went up like 4 points, and like everything was up. the only statistical data we have of him starting, he's better. But once again, quit asking.
Mike is too nice to say those words, but essentially that's where he's at. Like, shut up, guys. I'm not changing. I love Malik coming off the bench. If Malik's mouthing me, I don't need to hear anything else from you guys. Malik's always mouthing off to him. Well,
all right.
Pause. Okay. Yeah, all right.
God dang it. I mean, he's a regular. Is he a regular?
I can't say. I'm terrified to speak on this.
Most people are. Sucks. You were talking about, you know, you said something funny there. You were talking about the guys who are solidified in the, you know, Malik kind of being like solidified, maybe not so much Keon and Kevin, but it's like Malik is, we're just solidified or otherwise, like in that six man role. off the bench. It's got to be difficult for Mike, and I don't know how much he's talked with about this with you guys, but in the scenario, in the idea that Keon is starting, that means Herter is coming off the bench, which means Herter, Jordan, mm-hmm. and Trey all aren't active right now. Mm. And I got to imagine those are three pretty key bench guys. That's got to be a bit of a difficult task for Mike to navigate right here early in the start of practice.
One of the favorite things for at least myself and some of us media members to do is it's the color, like the color-coded jerseys mm-hmm. game. We always pay attention to what jerseys are different guys wearing. The starters are always wearing black, and the starting five have been consistent. Typically, the either blue or red jerseys, but right now they're blue, are the guys that are at the end of the bench, the two-way guys, the guys fighting for a roster spot, right? The grays are your primary bench unit. And Kevin Herter's wearing gray. Malik Monk's wearing gray. If Trey Lyles were out there, we know he'd be wearing gray. But now, right now, you have Isaac Jones. You have Colby Jones, you have Jalen McDaniels, you have Scal Labissiere, you have these different guys, Alex Len, which I'd expect him to wear that. You have a bunch of different guys wearing the gray jersey that's like, are they just there as placeholders, or does Mike really believe that these guys have a chance to crack his rotation? And forgive me with those guys, but it's got to be placeholders. Because like you said, with McLaughlin and Lyles and Herter, regardless of if Herter starts or not, those are three likely, at least day one or as soon as they're cleared with Colby Jones being out. Devin Carter. Those are likely three guys that are in your top nine rotation, probably, right? And if you want to extend it to top 10, you can throw Alex Len in there. So three of your top eight right now are a little bit banged up. So it'll be interesting to see what guys get minutes and opportunity in early preseason, when especially McLaughlin and Lyles are still trying to battle their way back. And apparently, I wasn't at practice today, but Mike Brown had some good things to say about Terry Taylor. I got to watch Taylor working a little bit yesterday on individually. He was working with Luke Louts and the coaches a little bit. He was working particularly on his catch and shoot and pull up threes and his perimeter scoring, because he fits right into that spot that Mike has been searching for the past couple of years. Guys, think back to the last 2 years of Kessler Edwards, right? A really good athletic defensive wing, but Kessler couldn't stay on the floor because he wasn't consistent enough as a shooter. He wasn't good enough spacing the floor. So Terry Taylor might recognize, hey, if I can get my outside shot down defensively, I know what I can bring. McDaniels probably feels this way too. If I can get my outside shot down with what I can bring defensively, I have a real shot to make this rotation, because Mike is looking for that. And Keegan needs some help defensively as the only real defensive wing on this roster right now that's getting playing time. So I'm very interested to see what the first couple preseason games look like and who Mike gives that opportunity to, and which guys are placeholders and which guys actually have a legitimate shot of breaking into that rotation.
Yeah, for sure. Is there somebody, because I know James yesterday, when we were talking to him, he said, you know, he's kind of looking to see what Terry Taylor can do. Is there somebody...
I'm sorry, I was trying so hard. I just want people to be aware of what's happening. There's someone cleaning the windows right like we're not here, like our job doesn't require a tremendous amount of and I was trying. I was like, just look forward, look at Kenny. And of course, Kenny, out of the corner of his eye,
because I thought somebody was waving to me. And then I was
Gina,
like, oh no,
Gina's cleaning the windows.
She's doing a great job. They're shiny.
No, she's doing terrific. Gina, you're doing great, Gina.
Oh, she gone. Can we get Gina's thoughts on the Kings?
This is the most ridiculous. This is the most absurd place, like, on earth. It's just the most ridiculous place in the world.
I was going to ask you, Matt, is there somebody in that group, in the Terry Taylors of the world, that you were like, I wouldn't mind seeing this guy get an opportunity, or I want to see him in the preseason, because he may have a little something to stick into the rotation?
It's a bad answer, but not really. I think it's just because I expect Mike Brown's rotation to be very familiar and very tight. I don't like nine seems like the max to me. Nine guys just feels like the max. And with the expectations on this team, the amount of difficult games the Kings are going to have just because of the parity in the league and being in the Western Conference, right? I don't know if the Kings can get away with not playing, knock on wood for injuries, of course, and you don't want to run these guys into the ground, but I just don't see a world where your top five, top six guys, your starters and Malik, don't play like 30 plus minutes a night. And De'Aaron and Domas are going to have nights where they're flirting with 40 just out of necessity. Like, I'm not saying this Kings team doesn't have depth. I'm just saying this, the league is too brutal for the Kings to really rely on their depth. So I'm more looking at the rest of this roster of break glass in case of emergency. Which guys do I feel comfortable with, I suppose, is a good way to answer your question, Casey. If Terry Taylor, if I know that Terry Taylor can come into the game and I'm not terrified that one end of the floor is going to be nothing. And again, that's kind of how I felt about Kessler Edwards. Liked Kessler a lot on defense, but on offense, it was like there's no reason to guard him on the perimeter. Zero. He would not knock down open shots. And he worked on it for 2 years, and it did not matter. So I'm looking for break glass in case of emergency guys, that because injuries are going to happen. Hell, they're already piling up here in training camp. When those injuries
Camp's defense, they all happened before camp started.
To be fair, yeah, Mike's not doing it to him actually with all of his two-a-days. But I'm just looking for who is that, maybe one at each kind of position or archetype, a point guard, a wing, and then I think you already have it in a center in Alex Len. Alex Len is your bright glass in case of emergency big man, and I think everybody's confident with it because they know Alex Len is consistent and he comes in and he provides something. Your guard and your wing, who are those break glass in case of emergency guys that when, knock on wood, one of your guards or one of your wings goes down, that you can just put in there and they can hold it down? That's what I'm looking for. And I don't have a name attached to either of those spots yet.
Interesting. I feel like Trey Lyles is going to continue to be a big part of Mike's rotation.
Oh, 100%.
What about Jordan? How do you feel about him? And Kenny and I have had some discussions about Jordan McLaughlin this week and maybe what his role is with the Kings. Because this all, of course, started with navigating the two spot and like how like rotations work from there. If this person starts versus if this person starts. And I admittedly kind of forgot about Jordan during one of my assessments.
Yeah, I think Jordan, especially with Devin Carter being out, I honestly, even if Devin Carter didn't have this injury, I think Jordan McLaughlin would have still been a pickup for this team just to give Carter a little bit of time. If Devin Carter was completely healthy, I think at some point this season, Carter would just ultimately replace McLaughlin. But we haven't seen Carter play a single second of NBA basketball, so we don't know yet. I look at him as whether it's out there with Malik, out there with Fox, out there with Keon, he's going to do the same job, which is he's a versatile guard defender. He can guard the one or the two. He's physical enough. I'm very interested to see, because he had a big jump in his three-point shooting last season, how much of that is real, how much of that was just a hot year. The volume wasn't necessarily there, but the shooting percentage went up. So I'm interested to see what that three-point shot looks like. I just look at him as, and this sounds so negative, but almost a placeholder. Like his job is here. Not exactly the same to like George Hill when George Hill was here when De'Aaron Fox was a rookie. It's not exactly the same because George Hill had a little more pedigree and had a little more important of a role. But I think McLaughlin is here to help the Sacramento Kings. He brings experience on a team that just very rapidly ascended in the West in the Minnesota Timberwolves. So that's always good to have. He's a smart basketball player. He's a physical guard, and he seems to fit in with what the Sacramento Kings want to do on both sides of the floor. So I look at him as just a solid rotational guard that gives the Kings time that they need to give to Devin Carter, both as a rookie and as someone coming back from a shoulder injury.
The only thing that I would say about that is I don't think Devin Carter is a point guard. I think he's more of a wing. So now if you replace Jordan in the rotation, you're left without a backup point guard, unless you think Malik Monk can be your backup point guard. And that maybe could be a solution to that. But I think Jordan is the only other pure point guard on the roster right now, even with Devin Carter's healthy.
So Malik made kind of put those thoughts to bed for me a little bit media day, because we were talking to Malik and somebody asked him a question about like his position. And I think they mentioned shooting guard. And Malik said, I'm a guard. I'm not a shooting guard. I'm a guard. Mm-hmm. So Malik's going to have the ball in his hands. Mm-hmm. So if Malik is out there with Jordan McLaughlin, McLaughlin may be lined up as the one, but the ball is going to be in Malik's hands more than McLaughlin's. Mm-hmm. We know this. Mm-hmm. Like the only scenario where Malik is on the floor with somebody and the ball is not primarily in his hands as if Malik's on the floor with De'Aaron. Mm-hmm. Other than that, when Malik's on the floor with Keon, with McLaughlin, with anybody else, and De'Aaron's not in the game, unless it's going through Sabonis or DeRozan and ISOs, the ball is going to be in Malik Monk's hands. So if you don't have to be comfortable necessarily, or none of us have to be comfortable saying Malik Monk is a point guard. Mm-hmm. Malik Monk is a ball handler. Malik Monk is a playmaker. And I think that's what's more important. And he needs the ball in his hands to obviously be able to do that. So I'm operating with the expectation that when Malik Monk is in the game and De'Aaron Fox mm-hmm. is out, Malik is handling the primary point guard duties of bringing the basketball up. That's just my expectation. Yeah.
Do you think there's anyone who could earn a bigger role with this team? This is kind of a tough rotation to crack.
Yes.
Do you think there's someone who could earn a bigger, even if it's just a slightly bigger role with this squad?
Kevin Huerter.
Oh.
I really think Kevin Huerter can. I think Kevin Huerter is going to start coming off the bench. Like we've also talked about this season, I think Kevin Huerter, because of how last season went, I think he might have a quick hook. If he's not hitting, I think he might be out of the game quickly. But if Kevin Huerter gets back to shooting the way he shot year one in Sacramento, how do you keep him off the floor? Like, even if you need defense, how do you keep Kevin Huerter off the floor if he's that valuable, especially if he's helping space the floor for DeRozan and Sabonis and everybody else, mm-hmm. right? And I'm going to take a side note here because I wanted to make sure I mentioned this on the show because it literally made me giddy on first day of training camp. I've been talking to you guys, and we've all had conversations about, imagine the open looks that other guys are going to get now that DeMar DeRozan's playing with them, mm-hmm. right? Fox is going to get looks that he's never had before, and vice versa. DeRozan is going to get looks that he's never had before because of the weapons on this roster. Mm-hmm. Keegan Murray should not be left open for three. Kevin Huerter should not be left open for three with how good of a shooter that he is. But they're going to get more open looks than ever, specifically because of Fox and DeRozan being on the floor and drawing so much defensive attention, and I can even throw DeMontis Sabonis into that. Day one of training camp, we speak to De'Aaron Fox, and unprompted, De'Aaron Fox goes, I'm playing with DeMar DeRozan. Man, I'm already getting shots that I've never gotten before. It's like, that made me so excited, because defensively, if I'm going all in on trying to stop DeRozan in the ISO or stay in front of De'Aaron, and I only have two eyeballs and one has to stay on Fox and one has to stay on DeRozan, and I lose Huerter in the corner or Keegan in the corner or whoever, like, the Kings can torch defenses with that. The Kings are stacked with the ability to make every defense second guess their decisions and pay for the decision they end up making. Yeah. Like, that is how the Kings are made. And spacing is going to be very important with this team, whether it's the four out offense with DeMontis Sabonis kind of in the middle or the five out with everybody around the perimeter. The Kings are going to open up space and force defenses to make decisions. And whatever decision they make, the Kings will have an answer for it with who's on the floor. So going back to Kevin Huerter, if Kevin is getting those open looks and he's knocking him down at a high rate, how do you take that man off the floor unless he's getting absolutely torched on the defensive end? Which I don't think, as much as Kevin Huerter struggles as a defender, it's primarily as an isolation defender, not a team defender. As a team defender, Kevin Huerter's fine. He's just as good and struggles just as much as other guys do on this team when it comes to team defense and communications and rotations. But ISO defense, if he's having to be switched on Luka Doncic, yeah, he's cooked. So that's the only way. If he's making shots, but he's consistently getting isolated on the defensive end, then you have a decision to make. But if Kevin Huerter's hitting threes with how the Kings want to space their offense, he could force himself either back into the starting lineup or force himself into like a very close seventh man role with Malik, because that's how good he is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that...
Because I want to make sure I didn't misunderstand you. Do you think if Kevin Huerter is hitting threes, regardless of what's happening on the defensive end, Mike will be forced to, like, he's going to get some run?
I think if Kevin Huerter is shooting at the rate that he shot 2 years
first
ago,
year Kevin, yeah.
You live with the defense.
Okay.
You live with the defense because you have now three guys and two guards who you feel comfortable giving the primary assignment to the top guard that's trying to switch on or attack Kevin. And you can just communicate, Kevin, get off him, get to whoever's in the corner. We'll take him. I think you can survive that a little bit better than you were able to the last couple of seasons. Mm. And Kevin's shooting is so good that it's like, you're just going to have a hard time finding a way to sub that out if he's on.
No,
sorry to interrupt.
I was going to say that's a good point. I also think Kevin Huerter might be a little better guarding somebody one-on-one at the forward position. You know, I thought, you know, without the foot speed, guarding some of these small forwards or getting switched off on the point guards or whatever, that's where the problem is. If he gets somebody that's a little bit more his size, I know they may still have him in the foot speed, but defensively he's able to be lower than that person, which is half the battle. I think he might be a little bit better at guarding guys a little bigger.
Yeah, I'm interested to see it. I have more faith in Kevin's physicality than I do his speed, which I think is kind of where you're going.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and you can get away with being more physical than fast against threes than you can against twos, mm-hmm. right? Especially when so many twos can basically be just taller ones. Like, so many twos can control. Hell, so many threes could just be point guards at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Point guards, like, the new average height for a point guard is 6'4" mm-hmm. at this point. So, I agree with you, Kenny, in the sense that, like, you can put Kevin Huerter on threes. We need to see what it looks like. But if Keon or Fox are out there, they're handling the primary defensive responsibility on the opposing team's main guard. And now if there are a couple of main guards you have to worry about, okay, you got Fox and Keon in the game at the same time. And even can throw Jordan McLaughlin out there, and McLaughlin's a solid defender. So the Kings are more, I could just be drinking the Kool-Aid and buying into the hype, but the Kings are more built to withstand the things that isolated Kevin to begin with. Kevin still has to hit shots. And I asked Kevin Huerter this at Media Day, and I asked it to Keon Ellis yesterday. Like, there's going to be a new kind of pressure on Kevin and Keon and some of these guys. Like, if you're getting these wide open of looks because the amount of attention the defense is paying to DeRozan and Fox, you got to knock those down. There's no excuse, mm-hmm. right? If you're getting left wide open in the corner or on the wing, and the vast majority of your shots are open to wide open, which is, I think there's no defender within 5 feet of you, I think is the metric, how they measure it, man, you better be shooting 40%+.
Yeah.
Because if not, then DeRozan and Fox are going to have a tough time because defenses are going to be jailbreaking on them to try and stop them.
Yep. Matt, it feels like this is the least we've talked about De'Aaron Fox to start a training camp maybe in his entire career with Sacramento, his entire career, period. That's got to be a good thing overall for everybody, yeah?
100%. 100%. Because we know what Fox is. I think we've gotten to the point where we know De'Aaron Fox belongs amongst the top players in the league. The biggest conversation around De'Aaron, and that doesn't change from training camp, is can he get back to all NBA because of the financial incentives, right? The biggest conversation around De'Aaron Fox is financial, because he's not only does he have the most talent around him that he's ever had at any point in his career, he is the household name in terms of, like, you know, De'Aaron Fox is a bucket. You know, De'Aaron Fox can score with the best of them. You know, De'Aaron Fox is just like every single Western team has their poster kid, their poster child. They're the guy that you see on the graphic when it shows like Kings versus Timberwolves. It's Anthony Edwards and it's De'Aaron Fox. Mm-hmm. It might be DeRozan for the first night just because of DeMar, but you get my point. Like, the league, the world knows De'Aaron Fox is that dude. So there's no question about is De'Aaron ready for that? Yeah, we know De'Aaron's ready. The question is, how does he make all NBA again with this roster, with the West, and how does he cash in on that paycheck? And most importantly, how does De'Aaron Fox become the leader on a Kings team that makes or that lives up to the prediction from DeMar DeRozan and makes a Western Conference Finals run? Mm-hmm. How much different is that version of De'Aaron Fox? I think the answer is, it's not that different from what we've already seen. Hmm. It's just the Kings are a better team.
Yeah. You know, it's funny about the squad as we wrap up here is De'Aaron good, Domas good, DeMar good. Ty might go to De'Aaron. Hmm. Like you, yeah. You know what I mean? Like if you're looking at all NBA stuff, and they may look at like, man, and you got a 50 some odd win team, the tie in terms of, well, all three of them were great, might go to De'Aaron on this one. Might go to DeMar, but yeah. It could go to De'Aaron too. Hopefully that's something we figure out.
I think the best way to put it, D'Lo, is I think DeMar and Sabonis have no problem handing the keys over to De'Aaron when it's his time.
Yeah.
But De'Aaron also has no problem handing the keys back if any of those guys are on. You can even throw Keegan into that.
No doubt.
I think that's what makes this team special.
Matt George, Locked On Kings, ABC 10. Basketball is back. Matt George is on fire. Make sure you catch up with the Locked On Kings podcast.